Okay, today I'm at Bath Racecourse with Matt Mitter. Matt, first of all, for people that don't know who you are, can you just describe what it is you do? How would you describe what you do for a living?
Yeah, at the moment I'm CEO of Valurator Limited, which is, I guess it's a tipping service, really. I'd like to call it, but it's definitely work, is some professional punting, which I do on track.
Right, so what would be your biggest source of income, the business or the punting?
Definitely the business. Business now, at one time it was just the punting, but since I started Valurator, that's been, definitely that's my main source of income. So it's easier now than it was before, because you haven't quite, and it's funny, it does actually improve your punting by not having that kind of added pressure of knowing that everything counts here and it is actually your living. So I would say first and foremost, now that I'm CEO of the Valurator Racing Club, really.
Okay, now I know a lot of these answers, but obviously the people at home don't. Can you tell us a bit about your formative years and how you got into racing?
Yeah, I knew it was quite late, really, in respect of, you know, you hear a lot of stories of people saying that, you know, from a kid and that. I was actually 16. I currently live in Shipton Bellinger, which is a village right in between and Richard Hannon and Mr. Beckett's yard. And it was actually down my local, the Boot Inn, was back, I guess, around 96, 97. Tony McCoy lived in Ainswick at the time. It was just as he started working. I think he was champion for the second year. Barry Fenton, who lived with him at the time, I believe, was obviously working for Toby Bolden. So they used to come into the pub, and I mean, initially, I mean, I didn't even know who Tony McCoy was. He'd been going in the pub for a little while, knew absolutely nothing about racing, but I guess they nurtured my interest from just hearing about it, and then started punting.
Now, I did read somewhere that your first two bets you had were both Richard Guest and Manx.
Yeah.
Did he mark your card? And they both won, I should hasten to.
Yeah, he didn't mark my card. It was just a case of, I guess, I knew a jockey's name from, you know, seeing them around the pub. And Richard at the time, Norman Mason, is it Norman Mason up at up north he was riding for? And I had £5 on one of his horses, 11-2, that one. And then he had another ride later on, and I backed that £5 win that one. So I was hooked. I thought the game was easy.
So you became interested in reading form. What sort of sparked that? Because I read that the form was always on the walls in the betting shop, and nobody used to look at it. That must have been some betting shop to run.
Yeah, it means, I mean, obviously, I mean, I had good early success, really. I mean, I just noticed, you know, these men running into the betting shops, not even looking at any form. They would just literally pick up the slip, look at the screen, whatever they were gauging what their selection would be, and running up and having a bet. But I just used to notice all this information on the wall. And I remember thinking, well, it must be there for a good reason. So I used to just look at patterns, really. So when horses actually won a race, I would look at the form and just try and see a pattern, a jockey, a trainer, really basic stuff at the time, and just become a little bit obsessed about it, really. And and I studied, really, the sport for a few years after then, but with mixed success, really. I mean, I was often sent to the bookies by friends. We're all skint, and it was like, well, we won a night out, send Matt to the bookies to try and turn the tenner into £100 so we could go off down Southampton. And you know what, quite often I managed to, but it was just really basic. It was literally knowing who the best jockey was, who the best trainer was, and at that time, Tony McCoy and Martin Pipe. It was just a case of putting all those horses into kind of lucky 15s, and you would get a good return.
So you didn't start subscribing to expensive form books or anything like that? You didn't go into that much in depth?
No. Didn't come to reading form, I guess, properly until much later.
Okay, now you left school with, you underachieved at school. So you, like people that underachieve at school do, you ended up doing brain dead jobs. which drive you mad. So you used to sky to go to the bookies. Did that supplement your lost earnings?
Yeah, well, I left at school. I didn't do very well at school. I was always dossing, and I was always trying to arrange a football match at, you know, I was interested at lunchtime, really, more than anything else. So when I left school, obviously with no qualifications, you're quite limited to what you do. So I signed up for a lot of agencies. I did anything from being a postman to a dustman to cleaning pots and pans. It was just not for me, really. And I was more interested, I guess, once I got into racing, and I used to kind of ring in sick and attempt to make my money at the bookmakers. And in truth, it probably wasn't successful, but at the time I probably convinced myself that I was all right at this, you know. And I think, like most people, you're remembering my winners, but forgetting about all the times you used to leave the bookies empty-handed.
So was it the horse racing itself that you became obsessed with, or the gambling?
That's an interesting question. I liked the idea of being right, of getting it right, probably more than the gambling. And that's the same to this day, really. You know, there's nothing better than trying to pit your wits and try and win. But yeah, really interesting question from the start. Yeah, I think it was more being right and the working out. And I was often surprised how often I was right on what I was slowly beginning to learn. So my initial thought from being in the bookmaker, seeing this form, to actually trying to understand the form, was actually improving my actually betting. So it was something that encouraged me to look into it further, really.
Okay, and then you moved to Birmingham.
Yeah.
And worked in a betting shop. Did you move to Birmingham to work in a betting shop?
No, I met a girl. She was a red coat, actually, at Butlins. I met her on a crazy weekend, and somehow managed to be kind of moving in with her in Birmingham. And I only had an interest in horse racing, so a job came about down the local bookmakers. And that was brilliant. You know, finally I was being paid to basically follow the sport I love. And I learned a lot there, more so I saw how much money people were actually doing, you know, on a day-to-day basis. But in truth, you know, most of my wages would have been spent on learning in the pocket, as I like to call it now.
Right, so I was going to ask if it was an education watching that, and also watching all that. Was it? I suppose it was in the days when they used to show the pictures in the, you're not that old, are you? They showed the pictures in the betting shop then.
Yeah.
So did watching a lot of racing improve your understanding of the way things worked?
Yeah, I think so. I used to be keen to work the extra shift, not just because there was extra money for the night racing, but yeah, you got to see results, and you know, you got to see regular racing. And I didn't learn a lot from the people in the betting shops. What I learned was to stay well away from the machines, and to stay away from Portman Park and all those other places that people used to like to have a bet.
People actually bet on Portman Park?
Oh, it was. And what was incredible about it was you had form that was produced, I believe, by the Racing Post. You used to put it on the wall, and it used to be jockey was Cherry Phillips, this, and there would be actually grown men looking at this, trying to find a pattern in, oh, he's due a treble, you know, we must get on this. It was incredible to watch.
Fantastic. You say you were learning in your pocket. So where does your mentor Dave come
into
this?
Dave. Yeah, Dave, bless him. I was in Birmingham, and an elderly gentleman used to come into the shop, and he used to have a couple of football bets and a few small bets. I now know he knew exactly what he was doing. He was finding an edge by going around all the independent betting shops to make sure he guaranteed win. But he used to come in, we used to have a bit of a chat, and he was just very helpful. So if we talked about a horse race, he would just point out a bit of form, very basic things. For example, I remember the first time I couldn't understand why a horse had run so bad when it had bolted up somewhere like Plumpton, and then we were looking at a newbie race, and it was just little things like pointing out, well, that's a grey track, that's a little track, you know, and the difference in the class of races. And I took a lot from him, and having known him for a few weeks, he, in his earlier life, he had been a bookmaker, and we spent every day on the phone. We used to have our little consultation, 2 hours. He'd give me little tasks to do to look over a particular race. I'd go back and said what I thought, and he would try and steer me in the right direction. But that's where I learnt to private handicap. And to this day, I use those methods successfully with my own punting now.
Right, so Dave took you under his wing then, really?
Yeah.
Was that when you were still working in the betting shop?
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. So what, did your punting still take precedence over work at that time?
Oh, absolutely. You know, punting was, that's all I really liked doing, really, is sort of going over punting. But more so, just I used to love the sport, you know, and it was such complications of the sport, and it just looked to me like this huge puzzle that needed to be solved. And I was just keen. I was a sponge, really. Anyone that I met along the way that I thought had a lot of experience, I used to just listen intently to what they had to say, and you just pick things up along the way. And a lot of self-taught, taught myself, really, in many respects. But Dave was the person who moved my form reading on to a level, and it was all pound a length. You know, he would say his old school methods, this is so many lengths better than so many pound, better than that. And by using those methods, my punting started, went from really being a bit hit and miss to actually having some substance. And started to be profitable.
Okay, so moving on to 2005, you've learnt loads of stuff. You've been a sponge and got as much information as you can. So you started pro punting in 2005. Mm. How did that go?
Yeah, I left Birmingham mainly to a common theme around this time, and that was failed relationships. So I moved back down south to where I am now, and I had. All of a sudden, I had an awful lot of knowledge that I had from Dave. Was determined that I wasn't going to work for a living, so decided, well, maybe I can do a bit of pro punting. I had a little bit of money behind me, and then started to go out to a few. To start with, it was all jump tracks, because Dave was a bookmaker and concentrated mainly on the jumps. So I went from course to course, mainly down the south, and. I was doing okay. Had no idea about betting banks or anything like that. You know, there was no great thought behind it. But I was doing okay. But it was during really those period of my life where, because I was having some success, that was enabling me to have quite a bit of money around that time. And the way I used to celebrate a good day was to go on the mitten list. Round some bars for probably 5 days on a time, and then kind of come back. So I always felt that I had ability to kind of be a pro punter, but in the back of my mind I always also knew that I had this little demon living inside of me, that how good could I be if I could just sort that out, really.
Okay, and it's you lost your license, where if you were betting on race courses.
Yeah.
Losing your license was a bit of a handicap.
Yeah, massively. I lost my license for drink driving. Drink had got in the way of most things at that point. So I kind of went off the radar a little bit, and the acceleration from losing my license, I then couldn't go racing on track. It just snowballed, really, my life out of control. And I got mixed up with a lot of heavy drinking at that time, and I thought I sorted myself out to a point, really. I kept it very private, got myself sorted out, and then was making an attempt to come back.
Now, then you became not a DJ, but a radio presenter.
Yeah.
So becoming on the verge of alcoholism to being a radio presenter, how did that happen?
Yeah, so it was around a period of time I just thought to myself, well, even though I got myself at this stage into a lot of debt, which was accumulated for basically not working, not being able to kind of gamble. And if I did gamble, I just couldn't really function properly due to my drink problem at the time. So once I thought, right, I've got myself sorted out here, you know, what can I do? I was driving from where I live in Shipton to Andover on the local radio. They were talking about Andover Football Club. Now, on a Saturday afternoon, they played in some non-league side. And I remember thinking to myself, why on earth are they focusing sports attention here when we're in the community living between Salisbury and Newbury? Surely they should have some racing coverage. So I took it upon myself to ring the radio station and left a voicemail to basically make the point, and said that I was the man to do it. And a chap called Simon Davies, who's the DJ, rang me up. He knew a couple of people in Lambourne. He thought it was a great idea. So had to get my thinking caps on. So I was going to have a radio show every Saturday morning, and I needed a name. And because generally my punting was all about finding value in the market, was Value, and Rater being a private handicapper. So the name Value Rater was born. And yeah, I did the radio show for best part of 2 years, every Saturday morning. I focused on the main races, which at the time were on Channel 4, and had a lot of great success, and contacted Newbury Racecourse, and we ran competitions. And the idea I had, all my own frustration with people, I guess, having a bet on a Saturday afternoon, that people weren't greatly informed. And that, you know, going back to my days when entering a betting shop and no one was looking at the form on the wall, you know, I just thought to myself, you know, people can enjoy this sport, and there was a way to do it. So by doing the radio show, I hope to kind of give some of my tips and make it enjoyable. And it was all really about providing the man in the street the opportunity on a Saturday afternoon to have a bet, with an opportunity of making a few quid.
With all this work you were doing, and assumingly sobriety, did you start making money punting again at this point?
My concentration at that time was about, I wanted to build Value Rater as a brand. So I needed, the concentration was literally on getting the business and getting the business going. At that time, I would have been betting my own tips, if you like. So on the radio, because I'd spent an awful lot of time on these big races, that I would obviously follow my own opinion, or I'd bet there. And as I said, we had, you know, we had an awful lot of success. Then I was looking that whether I could perhaps do some TV pundit stuff, and I sent a few feelers around, and it was very difficult to even get to speak to anyone in the industry. It seemed a very closed shop to me, a bit like dead man's shoes, really. And eventually, Bet Racing Nation, with Peter Finch. At the time, I sent him some footage, I believe, of some of the stuff that I was doing. And then he invited me to be on Bet Racing Nation, which was on Sky Channel 415 on a Saturday, and went there. And I thought that was going to be my turning point, really. I think through the previous problems that I faced in my personal life with the drinking, I just kind of felt that, I always thought that once I had one of those opportunities, the drink wouldn't be a problem no more, because I blamed it on, well, that's because I've got nothing to do and I'm getting disheartened with all the knockbacks I was getting, really. So I went Bet Racing Nation every Saturday, and I had a bit of luck. I think it was either the first or second time I was on, I managed to tip a 33-1 winner. And Pete offered me as I was resident pundit, but unfortunately it was towards the end of Bet Racing Nation, and it didn't continue. It didn't continue, unfortunately.
Now, then the drink took hold of you again. Now, yeah. Why do you think, you know, you're doing well on the radio show. Yeah. Why do you think that it...
Well, I thought that I could... I tried controlled drinking at the time, you know, and around that time I was still having a drink, but it wasn't to the extremes it was before. And I was kidding myself, really, thinking, well, you know, it's okay. But then I noticed that when I was on Bet Racing Nation towards the end, that even then I was struggling a little bit, you know. I would never drink before a show, but certainly afterwards, you know, I would go drinking. And when Bet Racing Nation finished, it was just really, for me, another disappointment, and disappointment I found very difficult. And rather than speak about my disappointments, you know, I would use drink.
And you eventually turned to Alcoholics Anonymous and faced up to the reality that you were an alcoholic.
Yeah, things spiraled out of control just after Bet Racing Nation. And it really had me. You know, I was blacking out. I didn't remember what happened the day before. Some of the consequences of my drinking were horrendous. I tried everything else before, Simon. I tried cutting down. I tried everything, and it just didn't work. And I saw Richard Hughes. A YouTube clip which was done for Channel 4 Racing, where he talked about his problem, and I watched that, and I thought, oh, that's me. You know, he described the whole melody of it, and I picked up the phone and ran an Alcoholics Anonymous and attended my first meeting, and I haven't looked back since. It's been 4 years now, but I stuck with Alcoholics Anonymous for... I did a meeting every day for 30 days. And it was a very, very difficult time. And, you know, it's 4 years on now, but, you know, the first 2 years were very difficult. You know, you start to understand that the drink's just a symptom to the problem, really, and it was, I had a lot of therapy and had to really look deep within to try and find those reasons why I was. But in truth, I'd never had one drink. It was once I had one, that was it. That was the end of it. But you know, as I say, it's been nearly 4 years, and I've seen great changes in myself since then. And it's often now I look at it, it's almost like I'm speaking about someone else, or someone else is not here anymore. But it was a tough time, and when something's in my downtime, it was all about drinking. You know, when you think of an alcoholic, you know, I would used to say probably, well, someone who gets up in the morning and has a drink, someone sat on a bench with a brown paper bag. And I was kidding myself to think, well, that isn't me. I don't drink in the mornings, and, you know, I'm only drinking in the evenings. But it was the fact that once I started, I just couldn't stop, and it was the consequences that went along with that.
So how long was, do you think, from going to Alcoholics Anonymous that first day to recovery, and then you kicked yourself into Value Rater? What sort of time span are we talking here?
Well, Value Rater was... Value Rater was still live during this period, so I was still doing some tipping, but the main concentration was obviously on my recovery. As I said, I threw myself into not just helping myself, but part of recovery work is about helping others. So I did a lot of voluntary work with a company called Turning Point, which is great, because what you need a reminder regular that you're an alcoholic. Because what happens is, after a period of time, it kids you into thinking, I'm okay now, maybe it was because of all that. So by helping other people, you get to see firsthand all the time. You just think, oh yeah, I remember how bad that was, and those feelings, and, you know, and how that was. So I guess Value Rater was kind of at a point where I was looking to expand it. And last year, obviously, new gambling laws and what have you, and how you marketed yourself was getting fairly difficult, and I was getting knocked back by various marketing agencies. Not that because I was doing any wrong, but it was just that the word gambling was becoming a bit of a dirty word in those networks, so I needed to have a think round to how I could really launch ValueRate and how I could really get my message across. So lots of planning went into what is now the ValueRate Rating Club, which is for relevant content for horse racing enthusiasts.
Okay, so without making it an advertorial, what is ValueRate now? What is, if someone signs up to it, it's free, I understand.
It's completely free of charge, and I think some people think, well, what's the catch with it? But it is. They sign up to a newsletter. We've got various journalists that write for us, and I hope we've got a nice balance of people. We have paddock notes. We have a all weather service. We have reviews, previews for the big festival. But also with that, I'm really passionate within horse racing to recognise that for the future good of the game, I'm getting really quite annoyed that I think on race courses, don't get me wrong, it's really important that we have big concerts on racetracks, but I'm a member to a lot of racetracks, and when I go around and speak to people that are going about their professional business, the main complaint is, well, there's nothing really for us, or nothing really to be catered for. So what I did with ValueRater is I made a decision that I wanted to look into some racecourse sponsorship, and I had some big knockbacks. You know, I went to a lot of racecourses, and I was told that their customers don't really want that, you know, and I saw it as contempt without investigation, really. And I boxed on, and eventually arrived at Bath with open arms, and all of a sudden they got what I was trying to achieve, really, and all our objectives fit into place.
So you sponsor very low grade races.
Yeah.
Now, are those the sort of races you would recommend punting on?
No. You know, there's two hats to that. You know, obviously with the racing club, because I'm principal partner at Bath, we do focus on there. You know, if I think it's fair to say, if you're serious about your punting, probably, unless you're well informed, it's probably the quickest way to go skint, betting on low class racing, just simply because the horses are inconsistent from one day to the next. But what I am passionate about is the sport in general as a whole. And, you know, you only have to look at the big days on racetracks, the prize money. That's fine, you know, they're being looked after. But what about the lower end? You know, where's the sport going to be in years to come if we're not looking after the grassroots? You know, I'm not so sure at the moment how attractive it is for an owner coming into the sport looking at the prize money. So when I came to Bath, which was literally initially just to sponsor a race, to raise some awareness to the racing club, it kind of snowballed. And through our conversations and the passion they told me about, they had the Sprints and Stairs series, which is for horses classes class 5 and 6. Which obviously is a £17,500 prize money at the finals. And it kind of fit all my objectives and what I was trying to do, really. So I was keen, you know, and I'm sponsoring that series this year.
How do you monetize this?
Yeah, so obviously within that we have Four from the Top, which is a service which is just £5 a day. And I made Four from the Top, really. It's four bets from best pro punters Wednesday to Saturday. It costs £5 for four bets, and it's aimed at people who may be coming racing, haven't got the time to read, that they can have a bet and they get a multiple bet. You know, it's classed as a bit of fun, so there's obviously monetization from there. And the all-weather service, you know, it's completely free of charge, but obviously if people read the content and might think to themselves, you know what, that's going to fit in with me. And quite often with the racing club, it's not all about tipping winners. You know, what I'd like to think it is a digital toolbox for me or you, Simon, that may think, well, we want to get someone else's perspective on things, you know, and to factor into their own thought process. So I guess ValueRate is moved from just being a hard-nosed tipping service to actually being something that anyone can use is a bit of a handy hint to factor into their own thoughts, really. And within that, I'm obviously looking, I think within racing, I think we all agree that the most important thing is to encourage people into the sport. So the other side to Value Race, what we're doing is some very basic videos, which would, you know, would seem to me and you probably that, you know, I'm trying to teach people to stack eggs. But I think it's fair to say that, for example, Lingfield last week, there was 10,000 people there for a concert night. I can probably guarantee you that 90% of them wouldn't know how to read a race day program, wouldn't know to have a bet with an on-course bookmaker. And I think if the race courses, and it is really important for the race courses to monetize and have these concerts, but also I think it's important that we share that leisure money amongst the bookmakers for the sake of things like the levy, and if to create an experience for the race goer, because I'm concerned that it's so niche at the moment, where, you know, real hard-nosed racing fans, it's such a small niche that in years to come, what's going to happen then? You know, we need to, I think, try and sell the sport. I don't mean getting people into necessary reading form and that, but if they're going to come to the races, to fully engage in the day rather than just coming for a sing and a dance.
Okay, now, you told me that you've been a full-time form student, obviously, to what you already do, which sort of encompasses it, for the last 2 years, and you've been winning for the last two years. What is your angle and your winning edge for your personal punting?
Yeah, well, I guess probably 2 years ago, Value Rate was at a stage I brought an operations manager in and had some people come to work for me. And the plan was, once I had the business at a certain stage, I wanted to go back onto the track again. One, because I love it, and secondly, it would only benefit the racing club to have some of my analysis added to it. Nowadays, I think, like most people, I'm on the exchanges. I don't personally have a bet unless I'm at the races, which has improved my returns massively. My angle is a lot more smaller meetings now, mainly because of the workload. I mean, I can spend anything from 10, 12 hours a day now reading form for the meetings that I'm actually going to. So where before I used to just use my form, and then I'd get frustrated when horses perhaps didn't run and couldn't understand it. But by being on track, I think it's your only edge you've got now, because you can factor all the form you've got into to see what you've got around the paddock. And most of my angle now, Simon, is to actually identify horses, not necessarily on that day, but I try and find horses around the paddock that I think have been overphased or out of their class. I'll put them then into the tracker and wait until they're dropped, and then I've got lots of horses in the tracker and I kind of follow their career through. And then if I fancy a particular horse, think they're in right, I then travel to that race course to make a point to go in there and back in it. My turnover of bets is a lot less, but my profit has been, it is massive now. But I've gone past the days of feeling that unless you've had a win on the day, it's been successful. You know, there's so much to learn from coming punting around the paddock. It's quite surprised me, because when I was punting on track before, it was more really all about the form. But since I've been taken and inactive in the paddock, even down to watching them go down to the post, and getting familiar with the horses and their traits, it's been massive. And also, I think if I go racing now on a Saturday afternoon, everyone's eyes on it. You know, there's no edge that I can find, where I find myself quite often, especially in the winter, the all-weather tracks, you know, I love it, because not so many eyes are on it. And if not so many eyes are on it, there's more chance that I'm going to find something that someone's made a mistake for. And that is very difficult, you know. And I think, not to say that being a pro punter, you know, you can't make money with, you know, you can't make money, but I don't think you can make the money like you did once before. But it is a case of nowadays, everything's got to be right for me. And if I get to the race and the price is gone, I don't back it now. But it's hours of form, watching replays of videos. But yeah, and more so in my head right now, you know, where before a good day would have been down the pub, a bad day would have been down the pub. you know, my life is completely different now. And the importance is, I think, I mean, I'm sure he won't mention, you know, mind me mention, but Alan Francis, who I speak to regularly on track, you know,
hello, Alan, yeah.
You need to be, if everyone was like Alan, you know, it's just level, you wouldn't know meeting Alan if he's had a good day, bad day, but you've got to stay that kind of level, you know, because if once you think you've got the game sorted out, the next day I just quickly remind you that you haven't. And I just think you've got to be consistent in what you're doing and accept that, I accept now that I'm going to be wrong much more than I'm ever going to be right. And that was a big change in my punting as well. It's because if you start getting your mindset, oh God, I've had I don't know how many losers. But it's about making profit at the end of the day. And I always say that if I ever back it, whenever I back a loser, I'd have always learnt something from backing that loser. Whether it be the horse is no good, or whether it's because physically the horse was no good, or maybe I need to look at that form again. You know, it always pays you somewhere. But the majority of my punting now, without a doubt, is from identifying horses around the paddock that I think have the ability to win the race. Not necessarily that one. You know, a lot of people will see me around the paddock, I'll say, oh, I like that horse, and they'll say, you're talking about that, can't win this, you know. But that's what I like, because I'm putting it in the tracker and waiting for the day when I think it is in the right race. And by that time, providing not too many have seen that, you know, I'll get a nice price about it.
Right, and you're obviously focused. You're still a relatively young man.
40, Simon, 40, yeah, just turned 40.
How do you see yourself in 5 years? What would you, ideally, what would you like to be doing? Would it involve professional punting, value rater? What's your ambition for the next 5 years?
Yeah, I'm really passionate about, you know, value rater is growing. I'm investing heavily into race course sponsorship, and I want to be someone that is not just taken out of the game. I want to be seen someone that is putting into the game, and I will continue. I'm committed to do that. I've already committed with a hefty investment this year into race course sponsorship and videos and such like. And next year, I plan to increase that budget and work with the race courses, you know, for the good of the sport. I just like to see more people engage in the sport. And by being on the race courses and having conversations with the race courses, I'm beginning to learn, you know, different people's perspectives. It's really important. So I hope to do some good for the sport and continue growing Valurator. And in turn, I'm always going to be racing. I'm always going to be around, you know, that the only place I feel okay actually is being racing and doing my form. I don't like sitting around. I don't do holidays very well. Although it's important that I have them. I guess I'm addicted to my work now. That addictive gene, I guess, that I've got in me somewhere hasn't gone away, but I channel it and focus it in areas where now I hope I can be ever help.
Brilliant. Well, best of luck, Matt Mitter. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Simon.